Hi, my name is Jamie Ridgway, the head coach and owner of the Renaissance Academy of Martial Arts. And today I want to tell you about some of the programs that we offer at the Academy. So in our Little Dragons programs, our 4 to 6 year old class, that class is designed for, you know, teach kids focus. You know, at that age, it's very difficult for them to focus. So we want to teach them focus. We want to teach them basic tumbling, basic martial arts skills. At the same time, you know, stranger danger, what to do if there's somebody that comes along they don't know and how to act. So we go over all those things, kind of a prep program for kids. We teach a lot of jiu-jitsu in there too. The 7 to 12 year old kids, now they're a little more mature and they're ready to start taking a big piece of the information as far as like martial arts classes. So in that class, we teach them Taekwondo blended with Muay Thai kickboxing, blended with Gracie jiu-jitsu, so that they are well-rounded. They can kick, punch, clinch, and grapple. And that's where, you know, in today's world, we see a lot of self-defense situations end up, is on the ground. So they need to know that too. So when they come out with a junior black belt, not only are they focused, but they're also well-rounded as a martial artist. And you're gonna see things like respect and self-discipline at home through the program, because that's the most important thing that we're teaching the kids. And that is, hey, we don't want them to learn all these skills and not showing respect and saying yes ma'am and no ma'am and doing their chores at home. That's really what it's all about.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another week of the Podyssey. My guest today is a really good friend of mine, my buddy Yasser. Yasser, how do you say your last name? Is it Mauricio?
Mauricio, yeah.
You roll your R's.
You gotta roll them, bro.
Bro, I'm not that good at Spanish yet. My salsa is getting better though, but my Spanish is still not.
The chips and salsa? Is that what you're talking about?
Nah, man. I can do a little bachata. Actually, my bachata is probably my best. And then merengue, and then
it just that's what every American says. The machata,
because it's the easiest. It's like if you have any rhythm, the machata is where you go. It's like, so for you, like, are you like when someone says, "Oh, I dance salsa," and then they go, "Oh yeah, I do bachata." Are you like, you don't really dance salsa?
No, I usually am like, let's go dancing, and then they're like, oh, I can't, you know, I can't go this week, or I can't go next week.
Right, right. So like, it's like when you're a hooper, you're like, oh, you hoop? All right, bet, come run.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you know, my hammy's been tight.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Yo, Yasser, tell the people, like, a little bit about yourself. Like, what do you do now?
Yeah.
What's your passion? What do you love to get into?
Yeah, so... What I do now, right now I'm working with U.S. Senate, interning there. I can't tell you who I'm interning for because they asked us not to.
Of course.
But, my passion right now is politics. And I say right now because I've had those, you know, different passions in the past. But I feel like this one's it's going to stay with me for a while because I planning to continue in pursuing that career.
Yeah. So what got you into politics? I feel like politics is such a hot button issue. You don't see a lot of young people being like, you know what I want to do? Get cussed out on social media. You know, I want to do some public policy. I feel like
I want to be hated on.
Right, like it just feels like if you say you want to get into politics, it is like I can't. Maybe an NFL ref would be like the most hated job, and then right underneath there.
Or a car salesman.
Yes, you know what? Car salesman one.
And lawyers.
Yes, man, I'm forgetting the hierarchy now. But in between, it's definitely top five. We'll say it's top five.
Yeah, for sure top five.
So like, what got you into that?
So I was traveling with a nonprofit, going different places. And while I was going different places, meeting people who are in politics, I really understood the power that they had not to affect our lives daily. Mm. And seeing how some people have used it in a negative way, you know, to take advantage of the system, I can't criticize politicians if I'm not willing to put my skin out there and say, you know what, I'm doing it and there's a way to do it the right way. And while keeping my values, you know, as a Christian, right. as a believer, but also not selling out, just buying into party stuff. And so,
like, do you believe that politics really has a purpose? Like, it can actually do some good? Do you believe that?
I don't think politics can. I think people can. Hmm. I believe in people. I don't believe in politics. When people ask me, are you... See, for my Democratic friends, I'm a Republican. Uh-huh. For my Republican friends, I'm a Democrat.
Okay.
So it's like... So okay. I'm nothing.
You right, know what right, I mean? Right. So as soon as you say you believe in one thing, like, I always knew he was a
yeah, exactly.
libtard, or he's like, he's a conservative.
I knew he was a Bernie Sanders.
Right, right. I got you. So... Like, looking at our political landscape now, does it give you hope for the future? I mean, wasn't like there a Dem debate pretty recently?
Yeah.
Like, yep. Did you watch? Did you like?
I watched the whole thing.
What do you think,
dude? I mean, it gives me hope in the sense of like you're seeing a more diverse of ideas, diversity in ideas. Like, you can't pinpoint anymore what the Democratic Party is.
And that's a good thing?
I think it's a great thing. Hmm. I mean, think about it. Most countries have like 4 to 5, at least, different parties.
Yeah.
The United States only has 2.
Yeah.
There's no way every single person could fit in those 2.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. No, I was thinking about that when I looked at like the Democratic debate. I was like, you know, people that say we should go to like the European model with like 4 or 5 parties don't realize that the president, like President Macron of Macron. Sorry for my French listeners. Of France, he won with like 20 or 30% of the vote.
Yeah.
Like, that's what blows my mind is that, like, y'all think it's...
Third party.
You think it's toxic now? Imagine a dude winning with like 25% of the vote. Like, that would be insane. People would lose their minds.
Bro, I had my country, El Salvador, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I don't want to do U.S. politics. I want to go back to my country and go into politics in El Salvador.
That's what's up.
So the current president, Nayib Bukele, he actually started his own party. So for the past 30 years since his peace accords that we had with the Civil War, mm-hmm. the same 2 parties have been reigning the country for 30 years. Mm. And people are just sick and tired of that. So he created his own party. And
before he won or now that he's won?
No, before.
Oh, so
he created his own party.
So call like Macron.
Yeah, call it Macron. New Ideas.
Yeah.
New Ideas, and he was able to win in first round. So if you don't win with the majority, you have to go second round.
Yeah.
So first round, and he won with 52% of the vote.
Wow.
That's so more than half of the population voted for him, and combined, he had more votes combined by himself than any of the 3 other parties or 4 other parties that were participating. Yeah.
That's what's up. So like, being from El Salvador and wanting to go back, why? Like why go back? What's the tie for El Salvador? Because you know, a lot of people come to America and they don't leave. They're like, this prosperity is awesome. I ain't going back.
They want to make it here.
Exactly.
The American dream. Well, because I understand the American dream cannot be the only dream. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
It's like every country, every person has a dream. And for me, it's going back to my nation. It's just an opportunity to be able to, you know what, utilize the opportunities that this amazing nation, the United States of America, gave me. Mm-hmm. The skills, the connections, and take them back to my country. And I want to make sure that other young kids from El Salvador don't ever feel like they need to leave their country so they can find an opportunity.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't think America should be the host of every single person who's having a bad government, you know? And so I want to go back to make sure that El Salvador is providing those opportunities, not only for other Salvadorans, but other people in Central America as well.
That's powerful. Yeah, no, that leads into like a big, a big political issue today with like immigration. I think a lot of people haven't thought deeply about like you made that point of like, should we be the host country for every country that's failed and everybody that needs to like leave that country needs to come here and, you know, supersede all the countries in between? What does that look like? How many can we take in? How many can we support and help?
Yeah.
And I think what you're doing is more powerful because you're realizing if the influx of El Salvadorians here is because of bad governmental policies, well, then someone must succeed here and go back and help their people.
Exactly.
Because, you know, if you came here to be American, was that the whole point of, like, leaving? Or was it not to redeem your country?
I mean, I could stay in the United States of America and be a senator and have more power and influence than I would be in a president of El Salvador.
Wow.
But that's not the goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The goal is to be able to affect change and go back and make that change for my people. I know it's not going to be just me. I'm the savior. I mean, our current president is doing amazing things and making sure that we get rid of all of the people who are stealing money from government.
Yeah.
And setting an example, I think he's setting the base of what good politicians should look like.
Yeah.
And, but I do have to tell you that I do believe that for the people that are here, mm-hmm. you know, like we're like DACA and more than 11 million people who have been in this country for years, I do think that the solution is not send them back.
Okay.
I think the solution is it's finding, because not everyone's like me, you know, not everyone has a desire to go back.
Right.
To their country.
Right.
Because, you know, they made a life here. A lot of them have served in the military as well. So it's not like we're just talking about people who, like, are just not doing anything. They have made their whole lives here, and now they've got to face the question, is this our country or not? Mm. But for those that have adopted this as their nation, I think that the government should do something about it. I mean, the last time there was an immigration reform was in 1982 in President Reagan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not even with us anymore. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. I got you. I mean, okay, let's expound upon that immigration topic. But here's what we'll do, because, you know, both of us here at this table are immigrants, right?
Yep.
I was born in Nigeria, and you were born in El Salvador.
Correct.
So let's, like, before we get into, like, the topic of immigration, I think we should give a little bit of, like,
background.
Yeah, a little bit of foundation, so people can know, like, our viewpoints. Here's the full, 'cause, you know, people, social media, gonna be like, they're waiting. And they're just going to be thirsty for this soundbite. And they're not going to, we want to make sure that they understand, like, for those that listen to this podcast, you know, the sojourners that enjoy this, that to understand someone's viewpoint, you got to also understand them a little bit deeper.
Yeah, of course.
That's what I love about podcasting. So,
yeah.
Yazoo, you were born in El Salvador.
Yep.
And then how did you get to the U.S.?
So, I was born and raised in El Salvador. I went to, did my, you know, kindergarten, pre-K, everything up until 7th grade. I was about to go to 8th grade when a couple of things happened in those years, prior to 6th grade, 7th grade. One was my dad was an influential pastor from a church in Lourdes, Colón, and about a high number of people, I would say, church in that time, prior to like 4,000 to 6,000 members. Weekly that they would go, and
wow,
it was you know, he had a lot of power and influence just because of the how many people came to the church, and he would get invited to different events, he would get invited to different conferences and all over Latin America. So because of it, people started noticing that he had all of that. We were part of extortion. They were extortioning my dad, and they came and tried to steal from the church. Well, and they tried to kidnap my dad. Mm. Failed attempts of kidnapping in different locations. Three attempts that happened. And after that, my brother also, you know, he was the one guy, that teenager that had a car.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people didn't like him because of it. Excuse me. And he also felt like, you know, like he was one of those guys that he wanted to help everyone, my brother. And so he was carrying guys, young guys, you know, teenagers, giving them rides and stuff. And a lot of people saw that as like, oh, he's becoming a gang member or something like that. But my brother never tried to do that. But they tried to assassinate him three times.
So your brother three times. Your dad three times. Yep. Any other siblings you have?
My sister. Yep.
And how is she? Is she gotten through the assassination?
No.
Okay, so she was safe.
But there was a drive-by shooting at my house. Good. I would say drive-by shooting, it's most like a run-by shooting because the three dudes were running. But you know what I mean? Like, the only way I can explain it to people, I'm like, it's a drive-by.
Right.
So you know what I mean? Like, they saw Hollywood, so they only see, like,
right,
on the car, pop, pop. It, this is we're running, okay? There was no car.
Right. You're like, yeah, in my country, we don't have no drive-bys.
Yeah,
it's really,
yeah.
I just walk up and shoot you.
It's a run-by.
Right.
But so, there was...
Okay, gotcha. I see.
Yeah.
For those of us who have watched certain movies, you understand the reference of the drive-by.
Yeah, so I say drive-by.
Now, what about for the suburban people? Like, what about... They don't understand what a drive-by is.
So, it's when gang members or someone drives by your house... And shoots you. That's about it. Like,
and the only reason yours was different is
because they were running.
They were running.
And there's three guys.
And they shot your sister.
No. Nothing ever happened to her.
Okay.
But I was with my cousins outside playing soccer when these three dudes came running by and they start shooting at us. And I mean, at us and other people over there. And I just remember like, kind of paralyzing, but then running to this, like there's like a post here.
Yeah.
And then there's a wall behind me and it hit the wall. And then the dog, the neighbor saw, was running in front of me. So it hit him instead of hitting me. Wow. And all of a sudden my mom comes out running outside. She didn't care. She comes in running. As soon as the dudes, she came running and she grabbed me and my cousins. We went inside. Since then, we had to move to a different neighborhood.
Clearly. Dude, this is, like, serious, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, why do you think we left our nation? It's not because, it's just we just want something different. Try something different. Let's go be undocumented in a different nation, you know?
Right.
No, it has to be serious in order for us to leave our nation. And, after that, we moved to a different neighborhood and still, my dad was scared for our life.
Is this after the three attempts?
After three attempts.
So you're in a new neighborhood now. He's like, frick, like.
I don't want my. Because they know we might have come a target later as we go into our teenage years.
Yeah.
My dad didn't want to put us in that situation. So we were like deciding, do we go to Australia or do we go to the United States? My dad just made a decision to move to the United States. The reason why we moved to the United States is we have come several times to the United States with a visa for events, speaking at different conferences and events and stuff. So my dad already had connections here, so he felt more comfortable. And Australia was more like, we had one family member, but, you know, it was more of a risk, so we chose to come to the United States. And also my dad wanted us to learn how to speak English because he knew the importance of English worldwide is. So
okay, so I got two questions. Like, one, did you want to leave? Like, how did you feel about this growing up as a kid, like seeing this? Your dad's prominent, you have a lot of eyeballs on you.
I mean,
you get shot at.
I mean, we kept it low-key, so not a lot of people knew about what was happening to our family. You know, you don't want to create like a big thing. And
because he's a pastor.
Yeah, he's a pastor, he's a community leader. And so a lot of people thought we left because of different reasons. Like my dad just hated the church or my dad was sleeping around with other women. So you know what I mean? Like people just try and make sense of things by creating a story that makes sense to them. So. So yeah.
What year is this when you guys leave?
We left in 2006, October 26, 2006.
Wow.
It's coming.
13 years this year. Wow. And you guys moved to where?
We moved to California with my uncle and I have like a couple uncles and aunts.
Nice.
In California.
What part?
Reseda and Hollywood.
Ooh. So yeah. Dang, dude, you went from El Salvador to, like, Hollywood, like...
Well, it was not like Beverly Hills, you know what I mean? Like, it was,
oh,
like,
yeah,
going
yeah.
living with, like...
Right, right.
With people and sharing beds and stuff. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, like, right. It's I've been to like around there, and I think one of the craziest things, I'm sure people have visited Hollywood will attest to this. It is not what they show you.
No, not at all. Not at all. Dude, there's a bunch of homeless people around, and
bro, the smells, the trash. Yeah. I was sitting here staring at the Hollywood sign, like they've lied to us. I was so shook, bro. I saw like this Michael Jackson impersonator, and you know he's doing his dance, and I, you know, I'm used to that. I'm like New York City, so I was like, I'll just stand and watch. So he comes around, and then I kid you not, you know, he's hitting like the hee, like, you know, like,
yeah,
my voice, I can't do the little like Michael Jackson thing.
Here you go.
He's like doing like the hee hee, like he's just like boop boop hitting this thing. And then I kid you not, I don't know where he looks at me, he's like, hey man, that's gonna be $20. I was like, yo, I was like,
what do you mean?
Like, what you mean? I was walking in the street. You started dancing.
He knows you cover money.
Bro, it wasn't like, oh, this is my livelihood.
Yeah.
And when he dropped his bass, bro, I was like scared. I was like, yo, Hollywood is like, I was thinking like, Hollywood, the Walk of, look, The Rock.
Walk of Fame,
Will Smith, you know? And then you pass that, it's like, oh, this is a town. Like, people live here.
Yeah.
So I can feel that for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I lived there and it was... I actually went to one of the worst middle schools in Reseda.
There's for you. There you go.
Yeah, one of the worst middle schools in Reseda. Mm-hmm. Dude, there was metal detectors going as a middle schooler. You know what I mean? Like, and we had to dress like white and blue.
Dude, so how was this for you then? Like, as a kid, like you went from like craziness to then this. Was this traumatic? Was any of that traumatic at all to you? Did it affect you at all?
I mean, my parents tried to keep it as like, hey, we're gonna new adventure, you know?
Right.
I mean, my sister was older, so she understood better what was going on.
You were close to your parents.
Yeah, and for me, it was like adventure, you know, of course, it's traumatic, you know, going to a. Now all of a sudden, I realized it wasn't, not so much in California, but when we moved to Texas, I realized, oh, I'm a minority. Hmm. Oh, I'm different. Because so we went from California to Texas, Texas to Maryland, from Maryland to California to Texas to Delaware to Maryland.
Dude, you're moving a lot.
Dude, I went to like 8 different middle schools. Like, yeah.
Did you have friends? Were you able to at least like, because you're such an extroverted guy. Dude.
I would just come in and try and make friends, but then, hey, see ya, I'm leaving, you know?
Wow.
And it wasn't because my parents were horrible workers, just like when you were. So when we came here to the United States, we tried to get asylum. And the lawyers at that time told us that don't apply for asylum because your country is not at war. Therefore, they'll probably deny you and you're going to be deported. Hmm. So we said, what is the other option? He said, apply for the R visa, which is a religious visa. Mm-hmm. And we tried to go that path. And I think it was like $16,000 later, nothing. You know what I mean? They just kind of took that money and didn't do anything.
Dude, I'm sorry.
So we were left undocumented in the United States. And while all that was happening, my dad had to, because he couldn't work in ministry. He couldn't work, you know, a normal job. So he started just working in construction. He started working in whatever. And, you know, construction jobs are seasonal, so then we moved to Texas, tried to make it there, didn't work out, moved to Maryland, try to make it there, and it was just a lot of moving around, not because my parents were bad workers, it's just like, when you're undocumented, you gotta go where the jobs are, and you, as a child, you don't have much to say, you know, you can't be like, oh, I like my friends, I like, you know, where we live, no, you just move. And figure it out and try to, you know, my dad at one point had 3 jobs. So I didn't see him at all. Mm. So it was just like, it was just working and my mom was working. So we were kind of left in the house alone. Mm. So yeah, but my parents, you know, try to make sure that we had our principles, our values, knowing who we are.
Yeah.
And, I saw my mom cry many times, you know. It's, you know, going from living a comfortable life, and dad having a secretary, have his own office. Mm-hmm.
He saw in a country you knew, the language
you knew exactly, your culture, your people, better food. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm sorry, but there's amazing food in Latin America.
Yeah, so. The Latin American food here makes you probably be like, what did they call this? Taco Tuesday? We don't do that in El Salvador. Yeah.
Well, we don't have tacos in El Salvador, but I'm culturizing you right now.
No, what I'm saying is, like, you know, people will assume that, like, y'all do Taco Tuesday, y'all do chalupas.
It's only like, Mexico. Oh,
right.
It's only like, Mexico.
It's like what we all we know is Mexicano food. And so it's like, El Salvadoran food, what's that? Colombian food, what is that?
Yeah.
Argentinian food, what is that?
Exactly. You know? Is it burritos? Yeah.
So you're out of your culture, you're moving schools, and all this while, as I'm like listening to you, like, dude, like, you and your dad, cool, like, because for me, it was hard when I moved here, like, because when I moved to America, that was the first time I'd seen my dad since I was like one ish, so like we had like a little bit of a relationship, and then he moves here to try and make it, and then. You know, boom, it's 96, and it's like, I have a dad again. So it was like, we were still trying to get to know each other.
Yeah.
And then my dad worked a lot. Like you said, like I don't think a lot of people realize how many, like, immigrant families are just held together by, like, hard-working parents.
So
it puts a strain on the relationship. So it's like...
For sure.
You know, me and my dad hung out through sports, but it was like, we didn't get the same, like, you know how, you know, some of these kids in America, like...
Oh, yeah. Their parents... reading them goodnight... You know,
I mean, it's insane. Like, I remember when I went to college, parents staying with their kids a week.
Oh,
just to make sure that they've settled in. I was like,
I'm like, what?
Me and my dad dapped up.
That's unheard of in the immigrant community, bro. That's like,
it's like,
I got to go to work, pay the bills.
It's like, so, all right, we dropped you off. You want to grab lunch? Because we got to be back on the road, you know, the traffic.
Exactly.
So it was a lot different for me. So, like, for you, did you feel like you've kept a close relationship with your dad? You didn't put any resentment on him. You didn't feel like, you know, you're the reason my brother, you know, got shot, or you're the reason that I had to move, or you're the reason that, like, I'm not where I want to be, which is with my people, my culture.
You know, from the get-go, I knew he was not the reason why we had to move. So that made it easy, not putting that blame on him.
That's good.
However, our relationship to this day is still not the greatest. Mm. Because when you don't see your dad, you know what I mean? And when I was playing soccer and all of your friends, all their parents are in the games and your parents are not, you know what I mean? And so my dad left, story, when I was 16 years old. So I haven't seen my dad since I was 16. So my dad went back to El Salvador. He just felt like he needed to go back to ministry. And the hope was that my mom would leave as soon as we were out of high school. And we went to college. My mom was going to go back. But my mom didn't want to leave us here alone, you know, with any parents. And we're going to go stay with my uncle and my aunt in California or in Texas. And my mom didn't want to do it. So my dad left when I was 16 years old. And at that time, I started really getting into soccer, having games. And, you know, I didn't have a dad to drive me to the games. I would have to walk or run to make it to the games. At times, my mom could drive me. But at other times, I would have to ask for a ride from a friend just to get to practices, you know, or even get from practice to home. And so it was some rough years. But, you know, I always had the mentality that I was going to make it. Hmm. And I've always had this fighter mentality, never felt like the victim. I got to tell you, my biggest... I know it's kind of a little bit off topic because we're going to get to it later, but my biggest, President Barack Obama went to office, I had so much hope. Mm. Because
I think we all did.
Because when he went into office, it was like, man, someone that is not white is going into office and he will care for the minorities and be a voice for the minority. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting a reform, especially he had the House and Senate, you know, and everything, the executive, it was all Democrat and Democratic. And I was just like, I had so much hope that we would be able to have my dad back, that we would be able to, my mom would be able to work, you know, and have a better jobs and go to school. And I would be able to apply for loans and, you know, and none of that happened. And that was such a huge letdown from not only this sentiment shared along many minority communities, but especially Latino communities, because he promised so much, you know, then he didn't deliver anything except whenever he was, his last term kind of made the executive decision for deferred action on childhood arrivals.
Mm. Okay, so two questions. One, did you feel like, you know, Barack lived up to your expectations besides DACA? And two, why is DACA important to you?
I think that President Barack Obama, his main agenda was Obamacare, you know, and I think that was, and he worked really hard, and he took a lot of political baggage and a lot of crap for focusing fully on that, which I do believe that, you know, healthcare and this country needed to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And I think it still needs to, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. I think that he should have been able to achieve more, especially when he had the Senate and the House.
Yeah, you gotta capitalize on your opportunities in politics.
I think that if he would have done something, I'll tell you this, if he would have done something for the, I can testify and I can probably tell you this, if he would have done something for a Latin American community, people, Hispanic community, immigrant community, mm-hmm. from everyone around the world, mm-hmm. we would not have President Trump right now sitting in office. I think that Hillary Clinton would have probably been our president right now.
I don't. Here's my thing. I think Barack was a president that people had a lot of hope for, almost like a first round draft pick quarterback.
I think people looked at him as the next Martin Luther King.
Right. Exactly. But I think people did not realize how little political experience he had. I think it played out in him not capitalizing on the situations that he had to take, like, or the opportunities that he had to take hold of. So you're talking about a guy who rose from prominence very, very quickly, held no prior office outside of
U.S. Senate.
Before the U.S. Senate, held no prior office before the U.S. Senate. So he was a community organizer, a professor, and then a senator. And then within his first term as a senator,
he ran for president.
Insane. So yeah. I think you probably will never see someone like that again with that little experience become president. But then I think you then see why he didn't realize to capitalize. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you put in like a joke. You know, some of these guys who've been here for a minute, you put in some of the Democrats that have been there. I mean, think of Nancy Pelosi. I mean, she would have been drafting legislation hour two into her presidency. Every proposal she would have had. But I think he thought that, one, he had time. Two, that the Republican Party would work with him. And I don't think it panned out for him.
Yeah.
And I think that also, I don't think he was as social justice warrior-esque. As people thought. You know, so I don't think he really had an agenda. I think he embodied an agenda that people thought he was going to take hold of.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really, like with his skin tone. So, like, yeah. Because he was black, you thought, oh, he's going to be about these black policies. And then you don't realize this dude grew up in Hawaii in the midst of a white community and went to predominantly white institutions. So it's not like he was from the hood and, like, grew up impoverished. You know?
I mean, but he tried to paint that picture, though. No, he Chicago. Did. And, I mean, he did work. We got to give him credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. He did do things for the community in Chicago.
Yeah, he was a community organizer. I mean, I don't really know, to be honest. I need to read his book, but I don't think I've ever seen any huge document. I think he passed some legislation for certain things, like with like I think busing. I've read into some things, but I don't think there was anything like major I hadn't heard of that he had done in Chicago. And with where Chicago is kind of like right now, you know, I don't think you can see a long lasting policy from when he was. Like he had tried to achieve. And yeah. I mean, maybe that's a thing with politics. I really believe in local to national when it comes to politics that, you know, I think people thought he was going to have more power than he did. And I think Barack was the start of what opened the door for Trump. Because I think...
I
think a lot of the things that we allow to slide under the table, like, oh, you can just do as many executive orders as you want. Oh, you know, we're gonna vote a guy in because he sounds great. He looks great. But we haven't really even seen him pass policy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why some of the Democratic candidates right now are struggling.
Oh yeah,
Beto O'Rourke. You know,
oh my dude,
he's
you can only have him with Obama, like someone who has literally failed in a campaign for Senate, runs for president,
but
and is taken seriously.
But I think that, you know, if Obama had not been in a way, you know, I wouldn't call it something harsh like failure, but definitely not fulfill the expectations that was set on him.
Yeah,
I think it would allow candidates like Congressman Beto O'Rourke to be right now up in the polls. But you know, the people who are right now up on the polls in the Democratic polls, you have Joe Biden, who's basically, you know, been in politics his whole life.
Right.
And then you have Elizabeth Warren, she's a fighter. You know what I mean? She's mm-hmm. passed policies. She knows exactly how to get things done.
It seems kind of unique to me how the top of the ticket is very, very not diverse, very, very old.
Bernie Sanders, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but
it's kind of unique to me.
But you know, even I mean, you can criticize Bernie for his policies, but you can that guy has been in the Senate for a while.
Yeah,
and, I mean, and he knows what he's talking about. Well, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I'm someone necessarily doesn't. I don't know if it's a good thing if someone is in politics for 48 years. I
gotta tell you this. It might not be a good thing if you're a sellout. But I mean, like, look at Bernie Sanders. I'm not necessarily making a, you know, I don't want to be seen like I'm Bernie guy.
Yeah.
But if you look at him through and through, he's the same guy from the 90s as he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hasn't changed one bit. Like, mm-hmm. the dude didn't vote for the Iraq war.
I think he's the only person.
Yeah, one of
the only people.
And now that we realize, oh, it might have not been such a good thing as it seemed back then.
Yeah.
People look up to him and be like, you were looking at this way before everyone else did.
Right.
So the dude has experience. And I mean, he's old, but the reason why a lot of young people, millennials, feel like is because he knows what he can get done and what he can't. And I really believe, I don't think he's going to win. Well, honestly, I just don't think that.
Who do you think is going
to
win it?
I don't think the Democratic Party is going to allow him to win, just like he didn't allow him to win in 2016.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy. So I don't think he's going to get the nomination.
But who do you think is going to win?
Right now, I'm thinking Elizabeth Warren.
I could see that.
Just because Biden, I mean, you saw in the debate, Julian Castro came at him and he didn't have a quick response. He didn't know how to get up from those situations.
When I looked into Biden's thing, I was like, I didn't realize he had like failed to run for president like other times before.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. It's not his first time.
So it's just... I don't know. I think if Elizabeth Warren gets it, I think she loses to Trump. I think,
a lot of people...
I think anyone but Biden loses.
Really? I really think that.
You think Warren wins?
I think Biden loses.
Oh, but who
more than anyone.
But you think Warren can beat Donald Trump?
Elizabeth Warren?
Dude, she lied about being a Cherokee Indian. she's whiter than my producer. Well,
she she did say that she took a DNA test. So Yasser, that kind of proves it.
I will put my life savings right now that you have more Indian blood than she does.
I think you might lose that.
You sure?
You know why?
I promise you might have a great grandfather. You know why?
Because Indian blood is people from India.
Listen.
I'm going to have more Native American blood.
Listen. All right. Native American.
I'm pretty sure people who are from India are going to be pissed at you right now.
Indian is a Native Indians to hear. All right, so Native American. I think you have more Native American blood than I think I might have more Native American blood.
I have.
And I'm full-blooded Nigerian. You're full-blooded Salvadoran. I think we're closer. I mean, she's what? 0.0000123?
Is that the pi number?
Oh, dude, I can't.
3.14.
Does she win the Native American vote? If she wins.
No, she's not going to. I mean, President Trump's ridiculous by calling her Pocahontas. Did you see that?
That's
ridiculous.
I think it's disrespectful, but also I think it's also kind of funny.
The dude is very disrespectful, yet he's very entertaining.
Like, I feel like he's like, yeah, I'm orange, but you're Pocahontas. I just think that if it's Biden, it's not going to be as funny. If it's him versus Elizabeth Warren, I'll be at every... I'm getting popcorn. I'm inviting friends over. It's
bro,
gonna be entertaining.
My candidates that I would like to be up there. I'm not saying this is not in order number 1, 2, 3, and 4. Yeah. I'm just saying top 4 out of the 10 that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It would be Bernie Elizabeth Warren, Beto, and Kamala Harris. And the fifth one, that like I said, not in that order,
mm-hmm.
but. I really believe that if you look at her record, she has gotten more bills passed in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
bipartisan, more than anyone in the Senate.
Who's that?
Who do you think it is? It's the senator from Minnesota.
Oh, Klobuchar.
Senator Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. Dude, that's important because I think people forgot with Barack that since he had never passed a major
that
he didn't know how to negotiate with the party to pass things.
But I really, dude, if you look at her record,
mm-hmm.
she has passed more bills than the Democratic Party than anyone because she knows how to work bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she's not that charismatic, outgoing, you know what I mean, personality. But she knows how to get things done. And for those people, I think I am a Democrat. I actually was liking Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was my pick.
You felt it? Like, you're like, all right, there's a lot of people listening right now. Like,
they're all hating on me right now. They're like, oh, he's such a Democrat right now. But I got to tell you, in 2016, I was Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush.
Dude,
the funniest story is the 2016 when Donald Trump bought the website. Do you remember that? JebBush.com, and it would redirect you to Donald Trump.
Dude, yes, I forget how funny the 2016 election
was. It was hilarious.
Bro.
It was so entertaining. I never missed any debate.
Bro, Hillary Clinton getting picked up to that bus, and it's like the grainy footage. Like, is she okay? Will she survive? I mean, it was just like...
It was comedy.
TV. The dude,
it was reality TV.
I couldn't believe he was even going to get a vote when he said when he made that comment about Carly Fiorina's face. I remember I was with my buddy and his wife, and she was just so offended that he would like make a point to like make fun of how like unattractive she looks. Like, what does that have to
like,
do?
Like,
remember Jeb? He made fun of Jeb's wife.
Yeah, I remember.
I swear Jeb wanted to fight him.
I like Marco Rubio back then. I like
Marco was good. Yeah.
I also like Ben Carson, even though he wasn't tried.
Ben was my pick.
Ben didn't have experience, but I actually liked him. So
I just thought like if we're going to go off of experience, then I thought it was a joke based upon the previous president that we just had. Like, you know, when people were like...
Well, I mean, we chose a guy with the... If you're talking about... Okay, if you're talking about Obama not having any experience, come on, bro. Donald Trump is the epiphany experience.
What I'm saying is that, like, you're saying, okay, like, my thing is, if the issue is experience, you're talking about, what, 16 months, 18 months? So you're saying in 18 months, that's the difference between him and Trump. Think about it. Like, it's that's the real difference between him and... So it's like, in 18 months, that experience is what, like, put Obama over the edge? No, stop. So I think that's the thing. Is like, what people need to realize is, what were the policies? What did you want to get done?
Well, I got to tell you, not only that, but who's your cabinet?
Also, like, yeah, who's your cabinet? That's true. That's
Let's be honest. There's many times Senator Lindsey Graham has come and said, we have a deal with President Trump. He agreed to do this. Mm-hmm. Hour later, he tweets something different. You know what I mean? Like, think about how many people have quit because President Trump said something. And then later, they get in trouble and they say it publicly.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, I never said that. Like, I forgot her name. She was the UN ambassador. Republican.
Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Like, they give her permission to say something. And then all of a sudden, they're like backtracking. The White House backtracking. Oh, we never told her to say that.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yes, you did.
Yeah.
And she quit. Like, it's. I'm pretty sure she quit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not.
I think she's gonna run in 2024. But I think
I really hope she runs.
I think what is unique about our political situation right now is I don't think we've ever had the conversation of, like, what do we really look for in a president? You know,
I mean, I don't think we have that.
Right. Because
we have a checklist on how to move your house, things that you got to do move your house. But we don't have a checklist for a president.
Yeah. Because I think people like it's weird watching these debates. And it's like, basically, you know, who sounded really good? It's like, dude, I want to know, how are we going to pay for this? And also, how are you going to get the votes?
Yeah.
And also, it's like people never really like, it's like all these things sound really good, or this person can talk.
Yeah.
Like, Barack Obama was the most charismatic. I mean, great father, great man. I thought was a historically decent to okay president. So I don't think he lived up to expectations.
Of course. But I mean, he had higher expectations than any other president. Right. Bush wasn't like, oh my goodness, he's like, I mean? His predecessors didn't set up a high standard. Bill Clinton, Bush.
But it's also hard because I don't think we even have like a standard of like, what's a good president? What's an elite president?
I think that, you know, the standards for Republican Party is, former governor of California, mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan, and president.
Yeah. I get that. I can see that. But even he was a former Democrat. I just think that like, We haven't really ever.
So what you're saying, you got to be a Democrat to be a great president.
No. What I'm saying is we have like a popularity contest. We have these debates where there's no real things being discussed. Because, well, it's just boring for TV to discuss it. So it's basically just like mudslinging and talking about your record and trying to be as appealing on TV as possible.
It's becoming more of a reality TV.
That's what I'm saying. And we have a reality TV president because it's more of a reality TV show.
Exactly.
It's like, have we really discussed, okay, there's a huge group of people that do not like children just being slaughtered out of ease for women to not feel bad about the repercussions of sex. And we have a huge group of people that think that like, hey, I should have the right to do whatever I want with my body. There's a discussion to be had there. There's a group of people that think, hey, we should all communally pay for healthcare. And there's a huge group of people that say, hey, healthcare is an unscalable expense. Like, you don't know. In 1 year, it could be $3 trillion, and the next year, it could be $8 trillion. How do we know that we have enough money to cover every single person's healthcare, full stop, forever? You know?
Well,
it's just these things. Like, yeah. It's like, people just say these things and they're super sounding great. And it's like, and also we have this huge debt. We have people that think
take care of the debt. Look what happened. And President Trump tried to repeal, quote unquote, Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And why did he fail? because of John McCain.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because, okay, yes, they had their differences, you know, and he was sick. Yes, those are true statements.
I still think it was petty. I don't think John McCain gave a political reason as to why he voted for
him. Well, a lot of people were going to be out of insurance. That's what.
Right, and they didn't have a plan to replace.
Exactly.
I get that, but my.
So.
But Obamacare, even in itself, was almost like a. I don't think Obamacare was meant to actually last. I think what Barack Obama did through executive order and a lot of his policies was, I'm going to force you
to make a decision about the future. Yeah.
So it's like, I'll do DACA and DAPA.
And that's why I think. And that's why I think that, you know, this policies of Obamacare is not done yet. We still need, that's what I'm saying at the beginning, we have to more things that need to be done. Right. Like, this is not a perfect system. We got to continue moving forward. So when it comes to immigration and DACA, that executive order, trust me, Dreamers and so-called Dreamers or people with TPS, temporary protection status, okay, do not want to be in that, stuck in that. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want to be Dreamers for the rest of our lives. And I'm speaking on for people that want to live in the United States.
Okay, so let's since we spent a huge time on politics and we skipped over getting to DACA. So you love that Barack Obama did this decision in the last year of his presidency, which was DACA and DAPA, which is, I think, his first legislation towards a minority group, I believe.
It was executive order, yeah.
Yeah, so. For those that don't understand, an executive order is not an actual law passed.
No, it's not.
So the executive branch executes laws. The legislative branch, meaning the Senate and the House, create laws and pass laws.
Exactly.
The judicial branch oversees the laws that are passed to make sure that they are constitutional and also criminally. Executes
exactly
the law. So if you break a law,
and they're not going against the Constitution, right, and the rights of the people,
they make sure that the rights of people are upheld. So when you look at the way our government works, which I think is brilliant, and you look at Barack Obama, an executive order was something that was put in to give the president an opportunity to, I guess, utilize us. Small powers for certain things. Again,
give a legal decision for 11 million right, or protection status. Right. But
like I'm talking about someone who's a novice. Like, I'm not someone that, if you're coming here for deep constitutional law,
we're not the people to go to.
We two are not the two people. We're just two immigrants chopping it up.
That's exactly right. It.
So when you're looking at executive power, the reason it's not always the best thing to do when you want to pass something that you like is because the next president can just
take it away.
Yeah. So DACA meant a lot to you because it covered you, right?
Yeah, it gave me it took away the fear of being deported.
Right.
It gave me an opportunity to go to school and work. Hmm. So for a lot of people, you know, I know people say a lot of things, but they think that, oh, you're DACA. We're paying, our taxes are paying your college and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not true. We pay taxes too, and we don't get financial aid. A lot of people don't know that. We do not get financial aid.
Well, where does that come from? So, like, you know, so you're a DACA recipient, which means, like, you're part of that, like, is it Dreamers thing, right?
Yeah.
So, like, where does that misinformation come from? Is there some truth to that? Is there, like, was there someone that got caught? Like, I'm always curious how these, like, is it just a complete lie?
I think that it's people with a different agenda, you know, that they want to divide. Okay. And, I mean, like, for people that don't read the executive orders and people that don't know or have a friend who are impacted by these programs, mm-hmm. and or people who don't bother to ask or even Google what do they get, what do they not get, and just because they see a post online, you know, a Facebook post, all these Dreamers are taking jobs and taking this and blah 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 blah. Bro, the majority of Dreamers are actually entrepreneurs. Like, they start their own jobs. So it's like, I'm an entrepreneur. I have a social media marketing business, you know what I mean? Like, we are not taking jobs from the American people. If anything, we're creating jobs. So I think it's so easy. I mean, think about 2016 elections. Russia was able to come and create, and all these bogus, you know what I mean? All these bogus posts that went viral and people thought they were real.
Right.
That's how misinformation gets carried and stuff. So,
I mean, I understand that. I'm a little bit, when people make a big deal about that kind of stuff, I'm a little bit hesitant to be like, well, Russia was able to make, like, listen, we're a country of freedom and free will. You should be able to
inform yourself.
Google yourself. So it's like
don't take a Facebook post by heart.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I don't get when people say like Russia influenced election by Facebook ads, or like someone's producing bad information about DACA recipients. We trust an adult to use Google. So I trust you to use Facebook. And so if you go to Facebook for your news, that's on you. But that's the part of the freedom that we have in this country.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm like a little bit like, if you're basing your vote off of like articles you read on Facebook,
blog posts.
Right. And then the argument like the founding fathers had about like, should we allow everyone to vote, becomes more understandable. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like,
all those who have Facebook cannot vote.
Or just like if you incessantly post certain memes, I think you should lose your vote. I'm kidding.
We're joking, by the way. We're not.
He's like,
they're gonna think we're against people voting now.
No. I'm for people voting.
Exactly.
I'm for.
I hope more people turn out to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not a lot. Enough people are turning out to vote.
I just hope people educate themselves more from both perspectives.
Yeah.
I always say,
challenge your perspective.
Yeah.
You love Trump because he did what?
Right. Right.
Well, what has he done for you?
But also, even if you hear something in the news, wait 24 to 48 hours, and then if MSNBC and Fox News both are saying the same thing, that's the truth.
Yeah, you gotta find the middle.
You know, because there's the
funny thing. I actually read newspapers from different, like the Sun from the UK, about American news.
Right. Right.
About the United States.
Right.
Because they have a less partisan view.
Right.
On issues. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah. So but it's good to get out of your Fox News, CNN, MSNBC circle,
right,
and explore other. There's life outside of those channels.
Right. Well, let's go back to DACA and so the Dreamers thing. Like, so for those that don't really understand, hold on one sec. We're gonna pause this for a second. Okay. So when you look at DACA and DAPA, these are placeholders, right? Because we still need to have the
TPS.
And TPS.
Yep.
We still need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
There's people who have been in TPS since 2001.
Right.
So it's like,
right. And you've been a DACA recipient since when?
Since 2012.
7 years.
Yeah.
So when you look at it long term, right, what do you want to see happen? Like, you said that we shouldn't deport the 11 million. Okay, I don't think we should, because I don't think anybody wants to see that. I don't think anybody wants to see mothers, children, you know,
people
that are part of our fabric now,
yeah,
just removed and dragged out in the street. I just think it looks horrible.
I mean,
I don't think it's the core of who America is.
Look what happened when, you know, Homeland Security ICE came to grab all these people from I think it was some store. I think, do you remember that? It was in Mississippi.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah.
It was like 300 people.
Jeez.
No, something like that. Don't quote me on all this. The reports is that ICE came and grabbed, no, from a factory. It was a factory.
Okay.
You can Google it if you want more details.
They can just enter.
Yeah, just be like ICE.
They're allowed to just do that.
Factory.
Just come into like.
Well, they came and they grabbed more like.
Wow.
I don't know how many people, but then there was like more than 600 children left without parents, and the schools like had these children, and they didn't know what to do. And then they lost a bunch of children. They don't know where they're at. Like, because people just took them into their homes and stuff, and, you know, to give them night sleep, and they figured out, oh, we actually lost children. How do you lose children? You know what I mean? Like, and that's on the government.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's a Republican-led government or a Democratic-led government.
Right.
It's on the government.
Right.
And it's on the... And I'm not saying... But there has to be... if you want to get rid of these people, right? These people who are in this factory.
Right.
Sanction the factory, first of all. Figure it out. What's the most humane way we can do this? I'm not saying, like, oh, they should not be deported. But I am, what I am saying, it's like, there's children, there's families, there's things. It's not just, let's say you have 2-3 children and we'll remove you today. What's going to happen with your children? They're in school. Who's going to come and pick them up? No one.
Man, that's the tough question, bro, because I'm like, I'm sitting here and I feel that. I mean, that's an emotional pull right there. But I also understand that, like, nations have to have control of flow of people.
Absolutely. So I agree with you.
I think both sides can get happy in that what right now is a stalemate of both sides want what they want, and that never works in politics. So I think you have to give
a compromise.
Yeah, I think there has to be amnesty or you'll never see anything passed. Like, the people here need to, like, we'll remove the Band-Aid that is, you know, DACA, TPS, and DAPA, right? The parent one, whatever. DAPA?
I have no idea. I'm not too familiar with that one, but
okay. Yeah. But, like, whatever the one was, it was like helped parents or older people than kids.
Yeah.
If we remove that, we let them have a pathway to citizenship. If they choose not to partake in that within, I don't know, 3 years or whatever.
Yeah.
4 years, 5 years.
And that's their decision.
Then they're undocumented. They're out.
Yeah.
And then everyone else from then on, like, because the thing is, I think I understand the argument of, like, you cannot just have a right to come here.
No, I mean, you know? It's okay, so how do you think we're going to stop the flow of immigration? Because I got to tell you, a lot of countries, especially Venezuela and all these other countries that have weaker economies.
I don't think you can these days. I mean, I was listening
Central America. How do you stop flow of immigration?
Joe Rogan did a great podcast with a Mexican like FBI agent or cop, like big time cop there, and just like the stuff he was saying, how like they'll fly people to Canada and then bust them in from Canada. I mean, they'll do boats any which way. So I don't think you'll ever stop it. I don't think the wall is I think it's a small deterrent, but yeah. I think that, like, the old school through the desert.
They got tunnels.
Yeah, it's like...
You know what I mean? Like,
when you stop the tunnels, they'll move to something else. So I think what you have to do is, there has to be more of a conversation of what we're not having. It's a tougher conversation. Is that you have a lot of very, very poor ran countries. A lot of countries that are squandering wealth.
Yep.
And a lot of countries that have misused the trust of the people.
Corrupt politicians. I mean, so...
No doubt.
So can I tell you what, from an immigrant perspective, from a DACA perspective, I know you're an immigrant, so, but from a DACA perspective,
yeah.
What I think the solution for is?
Please, yeah.
So solution for is exactly what the current president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, said. He said, we don't want to send you more capital of people, good workers, to the United States. We want to make sure that these people stay in their country. We want to make sure not only that they stay in the country, but we have opportunities for them in this country. So what I want the United States is, don't give us aid money. I want you to invest in this country. I want you to send your investors to come to this country.
So don't give a handout.
Don't give a handout. Because guess what? Corrupt governments are going to take those handouts. So what you do is you come in and bring investors and you bring them into a country, and then they invest into this nation. By they get rich, and you provide opportunities for people in those countries. So if, let me tell you, if Google were right now to put their headquarters in El Salvador right now, and there's a lot of tech jobs in El Salvador, where would people go to if they want opportunities and El Salvador is doing well?
they will go there, right? A lot of people from Venezuela are going to Colombia. Why are they going to Colombia, not to the United States? Because Colombia's economy is not doing bad. And it's doing enough to feed them, and they're close enough home. I'm not saying El Salvador is going to be the answer for the problems of Central America. But what I am saying, it's like, if you help develop these countries, if you make sure, okay, we're going to give you this money, we want to see it actually being used for the purpose of roads, hospitals, for you to build infrastructure so that people can come and invest in your country. So if the United States were to be able to help these governments, teach them how to fight against violence, teach them how to distribute and making sure that the money that is being given goes into what they said they're doing it, and I don't care if you bring people from America and you audit everything they're doing. That, like, when you don't trust in those governments, you should audit them. You know, you should bring a team that's going to audit all of their finances. Where's the money going? You know what I mean? And if the United States wants to stop the flow of immigration, especially from Central America, Mexico is a conversation in and of itself. But when, especially Central America, small countries, I mean, my country is smaller than the state of Maryland.
Wow.
So you can develop Maryland. You can help develop Maryland and make it secure.
So if the thing is investment, then my thing is, I think a lot of people are going to get upset because a lot of people love handouts. They love the idea of welfare. They love the idea of USA just sending hundreds of billions of dollars to, you know,
but they're getting
countries in Africa, countries in South America.
But the thing is, like, they're not using it for the people.
No, I know. That's my issue with politics. This is why I think politics is better local to national. Big government does not do well. And I cannot stand the mismanagement of government. It is insane. So I understand what your point is. I'm for that. I'm for, like, yo, like, instead of giving someone $500, yeah, invest in, you know, businesses so they can hire more people. So if you have more businesses hiring people, you have less poverty.
Exactly. So let me tell you, if you were going to give me, if I'm homeless and I'm asking you, and you give me $5, are you going to audit me to see where I use those $5?
No.
No, right? You felt that you needed to give me a handout, and you gave me a handout. If you're an investor and you're going to invest $100 million in my company, are you going to look at my finances?
Yeah.
And seeing how I'm doing them?
Yeah.
And where the money's going?
Yeah.
Right? So if we're doing that for private companies, why are we not doing that for governments?
Because government loves power.
No, why are we not doing it for, okay, if the USA is giving millions, in case billions of dollars in aid, why are they not audit them every single person and country that is receiving that money? We just give it and, like, yeah, oh, I hope you do something good with it.
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
hey,
I hope it goes to the people.
Your country was close to being a third world country, and then this civil war broke out. So let's give you a bunch of money to help because of the civil war. We still haven't addressed that you've been poorly ran as a country.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like you've been corrupt the whole time, but now this, like, hurricane or this typhoon came through.
Exactly.
So here's $100 million. For example, I think it is a absolute horrific, sad, just painful fact that we have given, as the world, billions to Haiti, and no one can tell me why Haiti is still impoverished. Haiti has not even moved the needle towards prosperity.
Not even better than Dominican Republic.
Bro, no, just
they're
like
the same island.
Yeah. No, just like, I know some people are like, wait, they are?
Yes, they share the same island, yes, with Dominican Republic.
I think what's just sad about Haiti as an example is just like, when you don't hold governments, people, countries, and just responsible for the investment in them, which is what USAID is.
Yeah,
I think it's a disservice to the people. And I think it's just sad that the people of Haiti have seen billions come in, and have not seen that disseminated across. But that's the issue with just giving money.
Yeah,
that's my thing. Was like we are not almost
teach adult. Me how to fish.
Yeah, we're not able to really realize that. For and again, there are people that just need money, just need some help, just need to get their basic needs met. I'm not against that. I'm not saying I'm against that. What I am saying
is okay, Andrew Yang.
No, I'm not. I mean, temporary. Andrew Yang's universal basic income is a terrible idea. I'm gonna say that right now publicly. Terrible idea. What I think is just sad is that we don't really understand it. Like, the better thing to do with someone is to walk with them on the long term. Like, imagine if the U.S. took the Caribbean underneath their wing and just said, "Hey, we want to invest. We want to send our top leaders and just do free conferences, free education. We want to start looking at like." I mean, it's incredible how the U.S. Constitution, the U.S. form of government, is not replicated across the world.
I mean,
there's ways these countries can start to uplift themselves.
I think that definitely education is a big part of it, and that's one of the things that when I go back to El Salvador, I want to focus on, is education. Because let me tell you, if you're we have a gang problem in El Salvador, and Lord willing, we're gonna get rid of it.
Second world. Third world country?
Developing nation. Yeah.
So right in the middle, second.
Yeah, not first, not third. We're in the middle, second base.
That's great. I mean,
but yeah. I mean, we have problems with gangs, right?
Yeah.
So they get paid what, $30 a day the most. Like the most. $30 a day. You get about maybe $500 a month, and you get jumped. You have to murder other people that look like you, act like you, speak like you, and live in the same country as you do, and love the nation that you do, for $500 a month. If you're a Harvard graduate, would you ever take that deal? Being beat up, and then you're part of the family, we're gonna protect you, and blah, blah, blah.
No,
right? Because you're going to have a bunch of companies lined up ready to hire you.
Right.
And you can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions.
Right.
If we don't address that problem of education, not only in El Salvador, but in different countries,
mm-hmm.
The reason why people are voting in these countries for corrupt politicians, guess what? They bring, literally, bro, I can show you a picture of this. They bring... So houses in El Salvador are made out of aluminum. You know, aluminum. So the roof is made of aluminum. They literally bring one sheet of aluminum and give it to people. And then they're like, "Here you go. Vote for me." And I just gave you an aluminum sheet. Not the whole roof. One sheet. And people, guess what? They vote for them. Why do they vote for them?
They think this is just a little bit of...
They're not educated, right?
Yeah, it's a little nibble. And, oh, he'll give me more. If he gave me this, he'll give me more.
Well, they're not educated. And let me tell you, if I come to you right now, obey, and I knock, "Hey, vote for me. Here you go. I'll give you aluminum part of a roof."
Right. Or maybe like...
Like American, I'll give you version. A shirt.
Yeah. Right.
Would you vote for me?
No.
Right? You don't even know my policies. You don't know nothing.
Yeah, it's my issue with Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang's like, "I'll give you $1,000 a month for 12 months out of the year. Will you vote for me?" And I'm like, you've done nothing to help that person.
Exactly.
Because you haven't taught them how to, like, for example,
how to create those
$12,000. The big issue for me with UBI when I study it is the means testing. Like, $1,000 to different people means something different. So if you give $1,000 to somebody who's poor, they probably buy food, you know, clothes, whatever, right? You give me $1,000, man, I'm gonna invest that. I'm gonna buy something to make me more money than that. I like $1,000 to a smart man, an intelligent man, makes him wealthier.
Exactly.
So the gap just grows bigger. $1,000 to
or
a poor man.
Or if you're Bill Gates, it matters nothing.
Right. Right, but it's like, it'd be like if you invested $1 million into Bill Gates' business and then you invested in my popsicle business. Well, I'm a terrible business person. But Bill Gates is on to build a business.
Exactly.
You make billions with Bill Gates, you lose your money in 3 years with me.
Yeah.
It's like we still don't address the heart issue with that. Human beings, you cannot just placate them by just taking care of their front, their means right in front of them. I think it's a good thing. I believe in charity. I believe in, hey, if you need food, shelter, you need a place to stay for a little bit, I'm all about it.
I do think
but you realize really quickly that human beings need more than that.
I do think also that the church has to step out on that, that area.
When the church,
a charity.
With separation of church and state, when the church said, okay, we'll only take care of this, like people that go to church and we're not taking care of the community, I think it was a sad day for the world.
It's a sad day. I agree with you.
Because government stepped in and then it just became this perpetually big growing thing. I think that's why I'm so big on my friends. Like, know who your local politicians are. Go more local. Your senator, your representative, your delegate, your mayor, your city council, they have more influence over your life. Donald Trump does not have as much power. Now, to you, yes, it does matter nationally. But that's because you're a unique case.
Yeah.
Once you become a citizen, what's the federal government to you?
Well, I mean, unless you try and work there, much.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? It's not on your day-to-day.
And I do believe that your city councils, they affect your life more than Donald Trump does.
Right.
But so go and finish, and I think just, I don't know if you have more questions about that guy specifically, but.
No, I don't know. Immigration's tough. I don't know. I think the solution has to be a bipartisan deal where there's some amnesty given to you guys. Yeah. And then there's just hard line, never going to change. Sorry, we can't do anything about it. Because there's always going to be another country. It's like, look, this happened in Syria. Like, I mean, people want to bus people from Syria. Like, these people don't even speak the same language, eat the same food. They're not part of the same culture. Well, let's move them to Dearborn, Michigan. What are you talking? That's a different climate. Like, we don't even think about, like, when we bring people over here, what that means. It'd be like if something happened in America, in Florida, and we move the people from Florida to Serbia, and we're like, look, we're just trying to save families from what happened in Florida. It's like, dude, you know, that's my issue with immigration. It's like, we're not thinking about the deeper impact. Like,
no.
What are you doing? You're moving.
But the good thing is that humans are better than flowers. You know what I mean? They can adapt better than flowers.
Yes.
But I do understand exactly what you mean.
You know?
And I think that immigration is such a like intricate thing. It's just not it's not a cookie cutter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I
think what you have to do is create like all right, if you come here for these reasons, here's a temporary visa for that.
Yeah.
You
know what I would love to see? It's like, hey, we're going to give you this, like people at the border are asking, you know, asylum and stuff. Okay, we're going to give you 1, 2, 3 years asylum. Show us what you can do with that asylum. If you're being fruitful, productive, and you're not committing crimes, you're not involving gangs, you're not doing all this stuff, terrible things, we're going to keep you. Right. And if not, we're going to deport you back because we gave you a chance.
Right.
And or have a rotating system by like, hey, we're going to give you for 3 years and that's it. And you got to go back to your country.
Right.
Because the reality is, bro, like the DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia, it's besides Los Angeles, is the biggest hub for Salvadoran people. And dude, I meet Salvadoran people all the time. And the thing is like, a lot of them are business owners. A lot of them have made it in this country. And I don't want to continue, speaking as a country, El Salvador does not want to continue donating capital for the United States. We want to make sure these people who have the willingness to fight, the willingness to create jobs, stay in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what every country wants. They want its own people to prosper in their own land.
That's right.
And
it's not racist to say that.
No, it's not. If your family would have been like multimillionaires in Nigeria, would you be here right now?
No.
You would be in Nigeria. And in the same way, it's like if my family, if I didn't have to leave because we were almost murdered, I would be in El Salvador right now. And if I would have came to the United States, I would have came probably because I want to study or because I wanted something that I would do it the legal way because I'm not in a rush. I don't have to do this. Why are people willing to walk throughout the desert for days, possibly die, being raped, being whatever? Why do they put themselves in such harm ways? It's because they see no other option. So in the same way, bro, if they're willing to put themselves through all that hell, how about we give them a chance And if they do not become productive members of society, take them back. I think everyone would be okay. If it's like you gave me a job. If you give me a job and you give me, I'll give you a month for you to show me that you're worth hiring. And then throughout this month, I'm just lazying around, not bringing any money and capital to your company, you'll fire me. I think the same way has to be with immigration. If a country is accepting refugees and all these, and even people who are fleeing violence, give them an opportunity. If they show that they have no willingness to prosper, no willingness to get ahead, I don't even care. Even if you tell people, oh, if you come to this country, you got to go to school. You got to go to university. Bro, a lot of people will take advantage of that opportunity. But it's when you don't have none of this, you have nothing, that people take the route of paying thousands of dollars to organize crime in Mexico, to put them across the border, and you just finance millions, if not billions of dollars towards organized crimes in Mexico. You know what I mean? You're clearly, like, immigration's financing, on top of drugs and all this stuff, is financing the cartels in Mexico. Mexico, the federal government, doesn't even have that much money to fight the organized crime, you know? So I think if the United States is like, hey, how about you give us those money that you're going to give to a cartel, to the U.S. government, we'll give you a permit for 2 to 3 years. And after that, if you're being a good member of society, we want to help you stay here. And if not, sorry, you have to go back. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, that sounds good. I can agree with that. I don't know, man. I just think that, like, securing the border means something different in the future. I don't think it's this wall. I can understand President Trump's heart behind it. I don't think it's necessarily racist. I think it's just countries have built walls. There's countries currently that have walls on their border.
It's
you know,
something that China did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, not even China. Like, I mean, there's South American countries right now that have walls on the border. Yeah, I mean, you know?
Like, no one... I don't think if you ask Latino people and ask them, do you think the country should have a border? Most of them, if they're honest, will tell you yes. Every country needs to have a border. And I don't think no one's against a border. I think what Latino people are against is, it's, okay, you're going to put this huge barrier, but you're not solving anything. All you're doing is giving the cartel, because guess what? Now there's a wall. The cartel's like, now there's a wall. We got to charge her more.
Oh, yeah. That's literally what that cop said on Joe Rogan's podcast. He said the cartels just raise their prices.
Exactly.
People still pay it, or they invent new ways. I mean, dude, they're sending drugs by drones now.
Dude, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
They're using latest technology to get around this. So a wall, a physical wall, is not going to do much. I'm okay with you putting a wall, but create a system that can work for people.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, if you could come to the United States legally or undocumented and doing it through... going through a desert, which one would you choose?
Legally, for sure.
Exactly, right?
I mean, that's what my dad was like, you know, for him. He just didn't want to sleep those nights. He didn't want to live that kind of life. You know, he's like, I just want to be able to enjoy, I just want to be able to enjoy this, like America. You know, I want to be able to enjoy my time with my kids. I don't want to be looking over my shoulder at the park thinking, is today the day?
Yeah.
You know, and not saying anything against your parents. I think it's just a tough discussion to have, because your dad was just thinking safety first.
Exactly.
And then he was like, frick, okay, what do we do? See, my dad had safety because, you know, in Nigeria, he had a good job as an engineer. So he had time to be like, okay, if we're going over there, how are we going to do it?
Yeah.
Because we're not citizens over there.
Exactly.
So he had a plan, you know, to try and make it happen.
Dude, we literally, a week later, bought the tickets. A week later, we left.
Yeah.
Like, it was quick.
Yeah, you don't have time.
How can you create a plan? How can you study about the laws in the system of a different country?
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
So.
I think we gave some good solutions. Yasser, man, this has been good, bro.
No, I appreciate it. This has been really good, bro. Appreciate you guys having me in there.
Who do you think is going to be the president in 2020?
Oh, man. Plead the fifth. I don't know.
Okay.
Skip to that question.
Okay. Okay. Before you, I feel like I gotta ask you a couple Capitol Hill ones since you're up there. Is AOC really who she is off of Twitter? Like, is she really like that in real life?
What do you mean? Because that, for so many people.
Yeah, I mean, she does those Facebook lives where she's cooking in the kitchen. Like, she's, she's our age. Like, is she really?
My friend took a picture with her the other day, and she just, like, smiling, and all she had was a hat. And
so she's like, she
goes to the mall. They've seen her just going to a mall, just like being normal.
Normal girl.
And most people at Capitol Hill, they have a back way where they get in. They don't try to go to places where there's a lot. She just doesn't care. And the only reason I know is because he's not the only one who has pictures and seen her. And
Right.
Everyone's like, oh, yeah, you probably find her. Like, it's not a weird thing to see her running around.
As someone that's in politics now, is it as contentious as it is on Twitter? Because on Twitter, it looks like people about to kill each other.
Bro, I think that, I mean, if you look at, I'm going to bring her up again, Senator Klobuchar, she's doing a lot of bipartisan work.
But that's not going to win her the presidency. It's
clearly
too
not. Clearly not.
It's too ravenous right now, bro.
Clearly not.
There's blood in the water. Like, if you're not, like, crazy anti-Trump, the Russians are at the beaches of Miami ready to to storm. You know, like, if you're not, like, the Republican Party is the Nazi party of the 1930s, I don't think you win the presidency. I really don't. I know it sounds crazy.
I'll tell you this, which I heard one time, and I completely disagree, and I want to go on record with this, is the fact that the Republican Party is not the party of believers. I want to, because a lot of people think that, oh, you're a Jesus follower, you have to be a Republican. Hmm. I completely disagree with that. And the only reason I disagree with that is because I met a lot of congressmen and a lot of senators who are Democrats who are Jesus followers. So I got to tell you I heard that a lot, and I got to tell you, no, the Republican Party is holding on to, they know that in order for them to survive, they have to embrace more the Christian values. Right. However, it doesn't make them Christian people.
But the Democratic Party, you have to hide your Christian values.
And the Democratic, you know? And
I don't think you can be an open Christian and be in Democratic Party. Well, that's seen as anti-LGBTQAARP.
Well, I think that for sure.
I apologize, IQ, whatever the
last there's like years. There's so many.
Maybe AARP is actually an addition to
AARP.
I don't know anymore. But I stopped after T.
It's a lot. There's a lot, but I do think that, I mean, I think we need to get away from parties and go towards people. Yeah. I would encourage people to vote for people and not for parties.
Like if 1,000% agree.
If you. Man, just because you're a Republican doesn't mean you cannot vote for a Democrat. Just because you're a Democrat doesn't mean you can't vote for a Republican.
I just don't even want to be named a title. I don't want to be given anything.
Choose
I just
to vote for whoever you feel like would do the best job.
I'd rather just talk policy. Like exactly. We just did. Like, yo, what do you think, man? Like, do we just let people come over the border? No. Do we just give everyone that comes over the border citizenship? No. What do you do?
There has to be a compromise.
Has to be a compromise.
And I think that, I mean, President Trump, I got to tell you, and this, I got to give credit where credit's due.
It's a real tan.
He has done a lot for freedom of religion, freedom.
That's very true.
He has done a lot for religious freedom. And as a believer and a Christian person, I am grateful for that. However... I do not agree with a lot of his policies that he has done with immigration and other things. But I think that we cannot be one issue voter. We cannot be. We have to look at the whole thing and figure out who can be the best commander in chief of this nation. And man, if one day I'm running for president, I hope that people look at me not because I'm handsome. Just kidding, I'm not handsome. But, you know, I hope that people vote for me.
You know you believe that.
I hope that people vote for me because I am proposing the best vision for the country.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Not because you sound good.
Not because I sound good or anything else or because right. I'm trendy. No, yeah. I want people to vote for me because I can bring and rally us around the best vision for the country. So,
dude. Y'all, this has been fun, man.
Thanks, bro.
Can we do this again?
Absolutely.
Season 2?
Let's do it. All right, we'll see if they like it.
We're about to get a lot of comments, dude. Thank you so much again for checking in. Hope you guys have a great week, and I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Until next time. All right.